and welcome to ESL Etc. My name is Dave. Please visit the website at eseletc.com. There you can find a variety of materials related to ESL teaching and to bringing global issues into the language classroom, links to a lot of other stuff. I recently started a blog. This week I'm going to talk mostly about what's going on in my teaching. So I'm going to talk about what happened in week one and what I'm planning to do in week two, a couple other school-related things that I'll mention. And then I'll talk about a couple of odds and ends at the end of the show. One thing that's changed as far as my teaching is my schedule. I explained the classes I was going to be teaching last podcast, and it's become a lot simpler. Basically, now I'm teaching 3 2-hour sophomore English for Tourism classes per week. And starting next week, I will also be teaching 3 3-hour freshman English for Tourism classes. Now, it's a little bit more complicated than that because it won't actually be 3-hour classes. It will be 4 hours of class 1 week and 2 hours the next week. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to work out, but it's really nice for me because the way that the classes were set up before, I was going to have to make 4 different class plans per week, and now I'm probably only going to have to make 2 or possibly 3, depending on how the scheduling works out. The other big advantage to this new schedule is that I have no large classes. Now, I should explain that a little bit. The small class size, the individual class size that I have here, I'm teaching English at a technical college in China, and my class size is about 50 students. But previously, last semester, and what I thought I was going to do this semester was, I would also twice a week have classes where 3 of those individual classes were combined, meaning I'd have 150 students together. And it's 50 doesn't sound small, but it's a lot better than 150. This semester, I'll only have 50 student classes, so that should be nice. Speaking of which, before I get into my class plan, I want to answer an email that I received. I have to apologize. I received this email before I went on vacation and read it. I received it right before I left, and I didn't have time to answer it then. And then I forgot about it when I came back, so I apologize for responding to this late. Basically, a listener wrote in and was asking, he's going to be teaching in China, and he's going to have he's going to be doing a similar thing to what I do. He's going to be teaching oral English with large classes, 100 to 150 students, and was asking for techniques and ways to try to get speaking practice in classes that big. And that's a great question. It's a really tricky thing to do and something that I'm struggling with every week as well. One of the problems is that, regardless of class size, students just aren't really used to talking here. I think this is probably a problem in a lot of Asian countries, maybe other countries as well, but the students are more used to repetition. So in an oral English class, they're used to reading dialogues or memorizing speeches and delivering speeches. They're not used to actually speaking English in terms of having a conversation. And for me, that's a huge part of learning English. I mean, if you're not able to have a conversation, if you're only able to say something, you know, with hours of preparation and memorization, that I don't think that's really any sort of useful English competence. So I try to get my students to do more actual conversation. It's tough at first. You're introducing something new to them. So there's going to be some silence. There's going to be some people using Chinese. But if you stick to it, they'll do it. And I've had pretty good results with some of my classes. It is definitely harder when you have a lot of students, though. When you have 150 students, it's a lot harder. But the ways that I would try to do it, I would do pair and group work. Discussion questions, for me, that's something that I used to use a lot in my teaching, but it actually hasn't. I've gotten kind of mixed results with that in China. The discussion questions work pretty well as long as they're really straightforward. If you start to try to get into some abstract stuff or some critical stuff, they don't really know how to handle those, and you'll get a lot of silence and a lot of confusion. If you want to do that kind of discussion, you have to take baby steps towards it. So real kind of basic discussion questions. I'll do a lot of things about personal experience and their opinion so that they don't need to, I'm not trying to test them on any sort of content knowledge. I just want them to be able to use what they already know to talk about something. Another thing that I like to do with a big class or with any size class are role plays. Again, I'd usually probably put them with a partner. And I talked about this a lot on another podcast. I'll link to it in the show notes. But basically, the short version is, first, we'll brainstorm about some sentence patterns or some content vocabulary words that would be useful in the role play. And I'll write all that stuff on the board. And then I'll have them do the role play. When I make the situations, for me, because my students are English for Tourism majors, it's pretty easy to come up with relevant tasks. You know, for example, checking into a hotel, complaining at a restaurant, those kinds of things. One little twist that I like to put on my role plays, though, is to have conflict. I like to have someone's complaining about something, someone's angry about something, only because those seem to produce more language. If the people just agree, then it's over. So I like to have, you know, if you're at a restaurant, it's not just order food at a restaurant. It's you order the food at the restaurant and you have to send it back three times for three different reasons. And then we would brainstorm, you know, possible complaints or possible problems there could be with a meal. Those types of things work pretty well. And a lot of times students will come up with funny things, which helps to, it seems to help with motivation when students are laughing. Other things you can do with a big class, I do some pronunciation work, but it's very difficult to do kind of micro-level stuff. So I'll do sentence-level intonation using the dialogues in their book, where we'll try to get the rhythm right, we'll try to get the stress right. Sometimes we'll work a little bit with reduced speech. And those are all things that a whole class can do together. And you're not going to be able to correct everyone, but for the most part, you can really hear if they're following the right rhythm and stuff like that all together. When I do the role plays, and also when I do discussion or group activities, afterwards I will ask for volunteers. And I do participation points. I'll talk more about that later in this podcast to try to, you know, force people to volunteer. And that, it's working pretty well. If anyone else has any suggestions on how to get students to speak, especially in larger classes, I'd love to hear those ideas. And similarly, if you have any questions or want to ask for any suggestions about some teaching methods or whatever, please feel free to email me. The email address is eseletc@gmail.com. Okay, so now I'd like to talk a little bit about how my class is going. So this is week two. Last week I talked about some of the changes that I had made in terms of having the students handle taking attendance and collecting the homework. Both of those things have worked really well. It took a little bit of time today because this is the first day that they did it, but it worked, and I'm sure that it will get much smoother as the weeks go on. So this is, and it just makes my job a lot easier. With 50 students whose names I don't know, it's very difficult for me to take attendance without a student assistant. And so having them give me a list of whoever's not there works really well. Oh, with the homework, I should mention this. What I do is I have a student collect it and put it in order by student number during the break. So our two-hour class, it's actually two 45-minute periods. At the midpoint, we have a 10-minute break. And I have them do the homework collection during the break because I think it's really important, especially with an oral English class where we're not doing any, we're not supposed to be working on writing. I think it's really important to use the homework. So typically what I'm planning to do this semester is have them do some reading from their textbook, have them write a paragraph answering a question that is related to the reading. Like, for example, last week they did the basic introductory reading and I had them answer the question, what's China like? Today, the homework I gave them was, how is China changing? And the reading deals with some of that stuff too. And then what I do is at the beginning of class, we use those the homework for discussion activities. So I don't want to collect it right away. And I think that helps motivate students. You know, they see that the homework is a useful thing. And I tell them very explicitly, the reason why we're doing this homework has nothing to do with your writing. It's because I want to make sure that we have things to talk about. And I want to make sure that you're doing the reading and that you're thinking about these things so that we don't just come to class and sit quietly staring at each other. Last week was kind of flat, which is normal, I guess. For the first week, we weren't doing really so many activities. A lot of it was kind of administrative, you know, just getting the class structure out of the way and stuff like that. This week, I've only taught one of my sections so far, but it was much better than last week, and so I'm hoping that it'll continue to be good and I'll get a bunch of participation. One thing that I'm trying to really do is to hit the same content a variety of different ways. So, and if this all sounds kind of abstract, I'm gonna, when I talk about what I did in class today, I think it'll kind of, I can give you a really specific example. So for homework, I'll ask them to read about something, then they write a little bit about that thing. Then in class, they read their paragraphs to each other and then discuss the paragraphs a little bit. Then some people share it with the class. I talk about some grammar, talk about some vocab, and maybe ask them some questions. And then what I would like to do and what I'm planning to do is to do some activities that build on what they already have read and written and discussed. So for example, let me move from there into what I did today. I mentioned their homework was to write about the question, what's China like? So they read the first chapter of their textbook, which it just, you know, it has the first reading is just called China, and it's a totally bland, very overly formal, kind of like an encyclopedic description of China. And so they read that, and I told them, for the homework, you don't need to take anything from the reading. If you have your own opinion about the most important things to tell someone about China, you can write it completely from your head, but I want you to do the reading too. Alternatively, if you want to use stuff from the reading, that's great, but put it in your own words. So you can take words, you can take short phrases. Don't take long phrases, don't take sentences. And for the most part, I think they did that. I haven't looked super closely at their homework, but I do collect the homework. And as I told them on the first day of class, if they're just copying stuff out of the book, I'm going to give them a zero on the homework. And in class today, the first thing that I had them do is take out their paragraphs, read them to a partner, and then talk about similarities and differences. So what characteristics of China did they both address? What did they not both address? I didn't give them too long to talk about it because that was just kind of a warm-up activity. So that whole thing took maybe 5 minutes. Then I asked for volunteers to share with the class. And I mentioned this last time, but the way I'm doing participation points this semester is the first two are 5 points each and are required. So 10 points of their final grade are based on those first two participation points. And then after that, I'll give 1 point per incidence of participation, and that would be above and beyond the 100 points that are allotted for the class. So people can really raise their grade by talking a lot in class, but that's completely fine with me. And I got a lot of participation today between the different activities that we did. I guess I should say this. I only count participation points when it's they're talking to the class. So when they're talking to each other, that's great, and obviously that's a really important part of participation, but it's just impossible to score. And so after our various pair and group activities, I always ask for volunteers, and I got volunteers most of the time, probably ended up having maybe 10 or 12 people get participation points today, which for me as a college teacher in China, that's a lot. And I don't, when people are getting these points, they're not giving me one or two word answers. They're giving me answers of a couple sentences. That's how it's set up. So some people read their paragraphs aloud. I wrote vocabulary stuff on the board, and we talked a bit about it. I asked some questions. And then the extension or the activity that I came up with to build on this, I looked online. I basically just Googled the question, what's China like? And I found a couple message boards where both foreigners and Chinese people were answering that question. And I sampled four of them. And all of my materials, there's not much really, but my my lesson plan and these four sample answers are going to be, I'll post them on the website, so they're in the show notes for this podcast. With the four example answers that I chose, I was trying to get, they're all pretty short, just like a paragraph, and I was trying to get a variety of answers. So the first one is really positive. The second one brings up some interesting issues. It talks about a lack of individual rights and corruption. And then it's also very positive, but positive in the sense that it says foreigners are treated better than the local people. And so that's kind of I thought that would be an interesting thing to talk about. The third one is also kind of, well, part of it is positive. It starts off positive, talking about how their memories from their 1978 visit are very good, but then it gets a little bit negative and says in 2006 they found it unremarkable, that the cities are just modern cities that could be in any country, and that they're going to come back again and travel slowly through the countryside, and if they don't find the old Chinese culture, they won't come back after that. And then the last one I just put in is kind of a joke. It's just a collection of very quick phrases. It was an opportunity that they mention bad eating habits, and so that's always kind of a fun thing to talk about. We didn't actually spend much time with it, but please check out the show notes for this podcast to see the samples. What I was hoping was I wanted them to get a sense of the way that foreigners talk about China, and I also wanted to, you know, one of the things that I like to do as a teacher who's interested in global issues, I wanted to kind of see if there was any way for them to look critically at their own country. So I didn't want to just give them all these positive responses. I wanted to give them a mixed bag and have them decide what they thought was true and what they thought was just opinion and stuff like that. So I read each of the sample answers two times, and then I asked for volunteers to tell them back to me, and again I gave participation points for that. So while I was reading them, I encouraged them to take notes, and a few of them did anyways, and then they read them back to me and I talked about some vocabulary things, and then I gave them four discussion questions. I asked them, how would you respond if you were a tour guide and your customer made some of these negative comments, how would you respond to them? And then I got into the ones that were trying to get at more critical thinking. Do you agree that the government or that the Chinese people treat foreigners different or better than local people? How do you think China is different for foreigners than for Chinese people? And then do you agree that Chinese culture is being lost? And the discussion part of that didn't go great. I gave them, again, one of the things that I realized last semester was that I was giving too long of a time for discussion. Because my students aren't used to it, 5 minutes is usually plenty. After that, things get awfully quiet. And I was giving them like 10 minutes or 15 minutes because that's what I was giving my students when I was teaching in Hawaii. But those students were much more motivated and much more familiar with the having a discussion in English. They were much more comfortable doing that. So the discussion was pretty, it was quieter than the other activities that we'd been doing. But afterwards, I asked if anyone had any answers they wanted to share, and I got some neat answers to a couple of those questions, and we talked a little bit about the way that foreigners are treated differently in China, talked a little bit about how traditional Chinese culture is disappearing, and, you know, I certainly don't want students to feel like I'm bashing China. That's not something I'm interested in doing, and I have to be careful with that sometimes. A lot of times you'll hear foreigners complain about how, you know, China's becoming so modern and they're losing their traditional culture. But what about our countries? I mean, it's not like you can find traditional culture in America. So we kind of were judging China for losing that, but we did the exact same thing. And you know, we want them to keep it so that we have somewhere interesting to go on vacation, but it's not conducive to a lot of the quality of life things that we wouldn't be willing to give up as Americans. So I just thought that was interesting. Anyways, so we talked a bit about those things. And then I had them do a role play. So again, we're trying to keep the same content, the same ideas, a lot of the same vocabulary words, the same sentence patterns, but approaching it from another way. And so this, with the role play, this was a pretty boring role play by my standards. There was no conflict, for one thing. Basically, I just wanted role play a foreigner who is calling a Chinese travel agent. They're interested in coming to China. They haven't made up their mind yet, and they just have some really basic questions. So first, we brainstormed some basic questions. That didn't really work. I basically wrote the questions up on the board, but we had questions like, what's China like? What's the weather like? What's the food like? Is it safe? How do people feel about Americans? Those kinds of things. And then they did a role play. The role plays were really good. People were speaking for probably about 10 minutes, going back and forth, and most people using English. That was really nice, and that's great because role plays are something I would like to do a lot of this semester, so I was happy to see that work. Afterwards, I asked for volunteers to show their role play. Nobody volunteered, which was fine. I hope that will change in the future. And this was kind of a dull one. Anyways, what I did is then I just went through a couple of the questions and I asked if anyone had answers. And the two questions that I wanted to talk about were, is China safe? And how do people feel about Americans? And I think that they seemed a little bit hesitant to say that China was safe. And they didn't want to say, you know, it's much safer than America. But once I said that, they were very quick to agree. And I think, yeah, China is a very safe country. Well, it's safe in terms of like violent crime and stuff. The poisons that you inhale and you ingest in food, well, hopefully those are only really dangerous over very long periods of time. Otherwise, I might be in trouble. In that way, maybe China's not so safe. But we didn't talk about that in class. It would have been good. Maybe I'll mention that tomorrow. And then the other question, yeah, how do people feel about Americans? That's always, in a way, that's kind of like a cheap question. What I mean is, it's always a really good discussion and it's really easy. They want to, you know, they like to say what they think about American culture, and then you can surprise them by telling them things they don't know. And comparing the two cultures is a really, students love hearing about that and they like talking about that. And so one of the things that they said was that people think Americans are open. And so then we, you know, I tried to get them to tell me what they meant about open, and we ended up talking about dating. And so that was just kind of a fun little discussion, but it kind of brought us off topic. But it was something that they enjoyed, and people were, you know, pretty active in shouting out questions and shouting out ideas and stuff like that. So that was nice. And then the last thing that we did was to come back to the reading that they did in their textbook, and then if they had any questions, we would talk about it. We only had like 3 minutes to look at the reading. Nobody had any questions, and I wasn't really expecting it, but when there's more time, and when I have a textbook, unfortunately, things here are not really well organized a lot of the time, and I have one textbook, my students have a different textbook. I made my boss aware of that. I got another textbook, which is still not the one the students have, but is the newer version of the one that I had, because students are supposed to have the same one as me, but they all have a different book, so who knows what's going to happen. Anyways, when I have a textbook and I'm able to read the reading, you know, the night before at least, and prepare a little bit, then I'll pick some things out that I want to talk about. But for today, I had to just read it during the break. So I just asked for questions. There weren't any, and that's all we did with it. But I think you can see this class is a pretty good example of what I was talking about earlier about hitting the same content from different angles. I think that one of the problems I've had in a lot of my other classes is I've been too ambitious in the sense that I've tried to cover a lot of content, and it's just been like a scattershot. There's not a lot of retention. And I also, admittedly, a lot of times I'll go in with an agenda of I want to, you know, get students to think about certain issues or get students to talk about certain issues, and I'm trying to really scale that back this term. And the class that I taught today went pretty well. Admittedly, that's just one class, and I've got two more sections with the same lesson plan, and who knows how those will go. But I think that hitting the content from the reading, having them write a little bit, discuss it, then do some sort of discussion activity that builds on that, then do a role play, and then finally go back to the reading. I think that pattern could work pretty well. It's interesting for me because it's a much more traditional approach to language teaching than I've ever had before. Admittedly, my language teaching has been kind of all over the place, and certainly when I was teaching in Hawaii, you could make a case that I was primarily a content teacher and really just teaching language incidentally, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. I think that if you've got language learners learning about something else using English, I think that's a great way to learn English, actually. But I'm really kind of targeting it more towards language acquisition and vocabulary learning and stuff like that this time, which for me, like I said, even though that's traditional, is new for me. Oh, let me get just a technical thing out of the way. If you're interested, I mentioned last week that I started a blog, and if you want to, you can subscribe to that. What I did, I just did this yesterday, but I split the feed into three sections. So you can subscribe to the whole blog, you can subscribe only to the part that's related to teaching, or you can subscribe only to the part that's not related to teaching. Right now, most of it's related to teaching. But I'm thinking in the future I might want to use it for some other things that I'm interested in. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I wanted to give people the option of opting out of those other things if they wanted to. So I know some people out there, you could very well be one of them, but some people out there subscribe to the podcast. I think that's wonderful, and I really appreciate that. And if you're interested, you can check out on the blog. You just click in the upper right-hand corner. There's a link that says blog RSS, and you click on that, and you can have the different feeds are all right there. So if you're interested, check it out. Okay, the last thing I want to mention today is a podcast that it's not new by any means, but I only recently started listening to it. I think it's called Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips to Improve Your Writing. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, though. The podcasts are very short, you know, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, and each time she just chooses one thing. You know, the one that I listened to was about when do you use which, when do you use that. And she gives really, really clear explanations. They're very easy to understand. She's got kind of a nice delivery, like it's not really boring to listen to. And for me, my explicit grammar knowledge is very, very limited. That's my biggest weakness, I feel, as an English teacher. I think my grammar's pretty good in the sense that I can tell you, you know, I can do editing. I can tell you this sentence is wrong, this sentence is right. But as far as explaining the rules, I feel like I can do it, but I flail around a lot, and I probably end up confusing as many students as I help. And so hearing her explain it is wonderful because, you know, if I can remember her explanation, I can bring that into the classroom and give really clear, very simple, down-to-earth explanations of these grammar points. I really encourage you to check it out. I think there's about like 75 episodes, and they're very clearly marked, right? By the title, you can tell this is the point she's talking about in each one. And it seems like I said, I've only listened to one so far, but it seems like it could be a great way to get ideas for giving very clear explanations of grammar points to your students. And if you're anything like me, that's a really useful resource. It might be good for some advanced language learners too, but I'm not really comfortable judging the level. To me, it seems a little bit difficult, but I could be wrong. Well, thank you very much for listening. I think that for this semester, this is kind of how the podcasts are going to go. I'd like to focus kind of week by week on my teaching. So if you're also a teacher, I'd love to hear any questions. I'd love to hear suggestions, comments. If you have any advice to give me or to give other teachers, that'd be great. You can write in at eseletc@gmail.com. Also, visit the website. There's forums there that nobody ever uses, but I do check. So if you post something there, it will be seen. And now that I've got the blog thing going, there's space for comments there too. Oh, and the website address is eseletc.com. Thank you very much for listening, and until next week, bye-bye.